Hour number three of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth taking you through this Tuesday morning here in Nashville, Tennessee. And Joe, not a good day yesterday in the SEC. COVID-19 rearing its ugly head once again. Auburn and Mississippi State, that game has been postponed from Saturday into December 12th. An outbreak with the Mississippi State program. A&M has had an outbreak. We'll see how that affects the Tennessee game, if it does, on Saturday. Sam Pittman, head coach at Arkansas, test positive for COVID-19. And LSU having some issues, maybe not going to be eligible to play on Saturday against Alabama. So all around the SEC yesterday, some major issues regarding COVID-19.
Yeah, and so far, all games are still on course to be played. That may end soon. And, you know, Tennessee on both ends, you've got past opponent, future opponent, Vanderbilt, past opponent. Vanderbilt's had its own issues, of course, and just got enough guys now, you know, to participate. Of course, that's also a lighter roster of scholarship guys for them. But with Tennessee, you never know. I think Saturday's game right now is at least somewhat up in the air.
Yeah.
I don't know the extent of Texas A&M's issues at this point.
No, and we'll see how that continues to unfold throughout the remainder of the week. Good news for Tennessee is, up until this point, no positive tests so far for Tennessee. So at least some good news on that front thus far with the Vols.
They've been in really good shape, you know,
since fall camp. I mean, they got hammered in fall camp, but since then they've been relatively lucky.
So the football hasn't been good, but they've done well on this front.
They have. And you brought up the scheduling part of this and how, you know, basically December 12th has been the date where if things get moved off course, you try to schedule that game and move it back to December the 12th. We'll see Vanderbilt and Missouri play on December the 12th as well. Now this Auburn and Mississippi State game moved to December 12th. SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey spoke yesterday about some of the scheduling issues that COVID-19 is presenting. Here's what Greg Sankey had to say.
We don't have an infinite amount of time to make up games. We'll talk to our athletics directors about circumstances that may not impact directly the division standings, the division championship in particular. Should we look more at December 19th, the day of our championship game for contests? That provides a little bit of adjustment flexibility. We've had games on our championship game day before. Not much, but we're in a unique environment. The other reminder we provided, there was a Friday, I think 2 weeks ago, where we announced five or six scheduling adjustments, and we've been somewhat continuous in saying those adjustments are likely to be needed again, and we won't change opponents, but we may change dates. And so you're going to have the same date and site, but we may have to adjust. Excuse me, we're going to have the same site, same opponent, but we may have to adjust dates to make things fit.
So that's SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey. And Joe, I mean, the thing that stands out to me there is flexibility. Going to have to continue to be of top of mind for the SEC, because right now, with the way the virus is kind of going through college football, this is probably not going to be the last week where these issues continue to pop up.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, you're prioritizing, as he said there, I mean, you're prioritizing games that could have a bearing on the standings. You know, the interesting thing, of course, is that it feels like the races are already done, right?
Yeah.
And it would take big surprises for this not to be Alabama versus Florida on December 19th in Atlanta. But still, you want to keep the integrity of the races. I mean, Alabama has already beaten Texas A&M. That's their only loss, but they're going to need Alabama to lose twice.
Which ain't going to happen.
Yeah. And then on the other side, I mean, it's the same thing. Florida or Georgia needs Florida to now lose twice because they're a game behind and they lost a game to them. So, I mean, that's going to be the game. And we'll just see. It's basically how much of this inventory can you keep together here?
Well, it's interesting because let's say, you know, Texas A&M, they run into some more problems this week and you can't play this game against Tennessee. Well, what happens if you get down the line and Tennessee has another opponent where you can't play the game on December the 12th? You've got to move it off. Well, Texas A&M is going to need all the games they can get because they are still, I think, theoretically, a part of the college football playoff discussion if they end up 9-1. So they're going to want to play as many games as possible to continue to keep their name around that conversation.
Yeah, but then you open yourself up to losing to the Vols.
Yeah, sure you do.
But I mean, but you're right. Like Texas A&M is that's a team that it could be that scenario of, well, you didn't win your division, you lost one game to Alabama.
Yeah.
If they look good in however many games they play, though, I don't know if like is 9-1 that much difference than
probably not
7-1. Yeah, I mean, to me, it's like whatever they play, they need to look amazingly awesome.
And they're going to need some help too, because like yes. Especially with what happened on Saturday night with Notre Dame winning, like if Clemson comes back with Trevor Lawrence and beats Notre Dame in the rematch in the ACC title game,
and it's a good game,
those two teams are probably getting in. Like it's probably those two teams. Alabama, and then Ohio State would be my guess. So it's probably a long shot anyway for A&M, but I'm just saying they're going to be, in all likelihood, in that conversation because you look at the rest of their schedule, they should win every game.
Well, I will say this too. I still – Notre Dame, fantastic rising up the other night. Great job with the freshmen playing great for Clemson. If Notre Dame lost at Boston College Saturday, I don't have a shocked face.
Really?
So yeah, I think they're good. They it was one of those they rose up and they just played an amazing game. I don't think they're great. We'll see. If Ian Book can play like that every game, then they're good, but he doesn't. He doesn't play like that normally. So yeah, you never know. There's still hope for the Aggies of the world, for the Cincinnati Bearcats of the world. I always mention them whenever we talk playoff.
That's right.
Yeah. Porth is nodding in approval.
I appreciate it.
Thank yes. Yeah. I'm glad we've gotten that required part of the show in for this week.
Met that quota.
Yeah, met that quota for the week. But in terms of COVID-19, obviously running through the SEC right now, still causing some problems in the Big Ten as well. Also the Pac-12, which began play last weekend. Here's what Paul Feinbaum had to say on just the COVID issues that are running rampant right now through college football.
It's not just the SEC, as you mentioned. We've seen games postponed and canceled around the country. So how concerned are you about the state of the sport?
You have to be. Yeah, I'm not making any kind of statement other than a reality statement that you have all these things converging at the worst possible moment. And, you know, last week we had at least 10 games put off. That's the most we have seen. Now, again, we have two new leagues entering the conversation here in the Big Ten and the Pac-12, and both we had two from the Pac-12 and one from the Big Ten. But you know, if the SEC loses two games this week, that's a big deal because you start getting into the situation, where do you make these games up? The Big Ten and the Pac-12 have no wiggle room. The SEC is running out of runway very quickly.
So Paul Feinbaum there pointing out that the SEC, I mean, they started early enough where they had some built-in wiggle room with their schedule, but the next couple of weeks, if this continues on the trend right now, quickly that is going to evaporate right from underneath them. And we've already seen that in the Pac-12 and the Big Ten.
Yeah, and, you know, we joke, like, Vol Twitter this week is like, please cancel the Texas A&M game.
Yeah.
But even with the limited crowd, that's important for Tennessee to have that football game.
It is.
I mean, very important. You know, it's important even with all the limitations around the city to have that game. It's not. It's a fraction of what it is in a normal year, but it's still important, and you look at the financial strain everywhere, and if you want to take that to the whole discussion about Jeremy Pruitt.
Need as much money to go to that buyout as you can get, baby.
I mean, you know, it's look, if you the more revenue that you don't get, you know, the tougher it is to make decisions like that. So, I mean, it's these games are, you know, it's the very cynical way of looking at this is this is all just for money. I mean, it is. It's for money. It's for money for a whole bunch of people who, you know, have regular salaries and work hard and, you know, don't want to get laid off and furloughed, too. It's not just for the people who are making seven figures.
Right. And, you know, you think back to the Tennessee game on Saturday night, and you brought this up earlier in the show, Sam Pittman obviously didn't know he was positive at the time, but he's out there, you know, hugging Trey Smith and hugging Cade Mays and in the locker room after the game in Arkansas giving this big rah-rah speech about beating Tennessee. And then you think to yourself, okay, in the next couple of days, are we going to see maybe an issue crop up with Tennessee or maybe a bigger issue crop up with Arkansas? Just a whole mess that you get into with all of this stuff and the testing going on right now in college football.
Yeah, it's just – and the Notre Dame fan thing was, you know –
storming the field.
Yeah. It's just best for everyone to just try to take every precaution they can. You know, it's obviously people are excited. It's like Jacob Turner, which I was surprised, a little bit puzzled that there was no punishment there. But, you know, you're in this moment of a victory or whatever, and you want things to be normal, but they aren't normal. So, you know, keep that in mind and act like it. I know it's easy to sit here and say that, but it would be good for people to do that. And I think we're seeing a lot of slacking off right now.
We are, and, you know, we've heard, maybe getting into when it's colder, the virus starts to uptick a little bit. Now, maybe some positive news yesterday. We've got vaccines potentially rolling out, some antibody testing. We'll take it. But
go Pfizer.
Yeah. But
Pfizer's in the lead.
Pfizer's in the lead, baby. But, I mean, I think still realistically probably not in a place with that where that's going to have any impact on college football whatsoever.
Right.
At least this year.
I think the realistic hope is that you could be talking about distribution if all stays on a good path, like by the summer. So maybe next year's football season is completely not impacted. Normal camp, normal, all that stuff. That sounds amazing, but that's still a long way off.
It does sound amazing. Like, we've been trying to get back to that point for a long time.
I'm gonna be such an annoying close talker for so many months.
Have you gotten to the point yet where, like, you're watching a movie or something, and you see a bunch of people like close together, and you're like, "Huh, they're not social distancing very well at all."
I have not.
I have. Like,
gosh,
I feel
bad for you.
Like, my wedding was a year ago, I guess yesterday, and like the time hop, I look and like so many people are close to each other. I'm like, "Huh, wait a minute, that was allowed then. Cool, we didn't break any rules."
I mean,
awesome.
This is guaranteed to happen to me now. You just put that in my head.
Yeah,
it hasn't happened to me, but. Now that I think about it, I think back to like concerts you've gone
yeah.
to. Like I've been in like mosh pits at a Metallica concert, you know? Just like spitting and sweating and smashing into each other, and I mean just
do a lot of spitting
the
at
good
those
old
concerts.
Days. Well, there's a lot of fluids flying around.
That's good to know. But even like I watched I saw the replay of Aaron Boone. I don't know why I saw this the other day, but Aaron Boone hitting the homer against Boston in, like, what was that, 03? And just the crowd, number one, how close everybody was together, like jumping on top of each other. But number two, obviously in 2003, nobody had a smartphone. Like, it's a totally different time we're living in right now. Just
so
17
nobody
years
having
later.
A smartphone, in other words, people aren't out there like.
They're not recording everything. Yeah, like, yeah. They're actually having a genuine reaction to something. Like, do you remember what it was like to go to concerts and, like, watch the concert rather than record the whole thing on your phone?
I had no phone anywhere. No such thing as cell phones when I was at that Metallica concert. Like, basically, there were like 100 rich people in the country had them then.
What I would love to know from the people who pay big money to go to a concert and then stand there or sit there and then record every song on their phone, whether or not they go back and watch those videos.
Yeah, like what are you doing?
I would love to know if that actually happens.
Yeah, like. Is that just for their own? I guess, are people trying to like bootleg stuff when they do that? If they spend,
I think
whole
they're
concert?
Just showing off. Like, hey, look where I am right now. I'm gonna put this on social media and record the whole thing.
Yeah, like I kind of get if you're, it's a great song. You're like, this is amazing. Take 10 seconds of it and tweet it. Like, this concert's amazing, right?
Sure.
But yeah, if you do the whole thing, how is that fun?
I don't think it's fun at all. But it drives me nuts. It happens at every concert, every single one. Phones go up. You just start recording. Like, okay.
Right.
We get it. Just in, like, try to remember something in your brain.
Yeah. Like, have a beer and enjoy the show.
Experience it. Yeah. Right. When we come back, some very interesting comments made yesterday by Tennessee head football coach Jeremy Pruitt. We'll break those down on the other side. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Jeremy, obviously with a 4-game losing streak, Fall Nation's getting a little restless. What do you say to them to say, hey, relax, we're getting this thing turned around?
Well, I sure wouldn't say that. That'd be the first thing. Why, you know, to me, I'm just as restless as they are, you know. So I think everybody's kind of in this together. We all want the same things. You know, it's my name's at the head of the organization, right? I understand that. And we as a group in this organization, we got to find a way to get it going and play the right way and finish the right way. And that's on me as the coach and to get it going. And we're going to work hard to do that.
That was Tennessee head coach Jeremy Pruitt yesterday at his weekly press conference with the media. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. And Jeremy Pruitt there preaching, Joe. We're all in this together as Tennessee fans. He feels exactly where you are. He's restless right there with you.
I sense a little sarcasm on your
I think he knows. I think there's some there was some self-awareness on that clip. I like that.
Yeah, that was fine. That could have gone a number of ways for Jeremy. You gotta be careful, Jeremy.
How much? So when they've lost four games in a row, and the fan base at Tennessee is as volatile as we all know that it is, how much time do you think Pruitt spends like sitting down with people, trying to figure out the best way to answer stuff like that? I would say significant time.
Yeah, you think so?
Yeah. Because he's not really a guy that's had to do this before, especially in a situation like this where things are going very poorly in your third year.
That's a really – I'll tell you what. So Butch Jones, I'd say like hours a day with people looking in the mirror, you know, like – and still like
– failed miserably.
Came up with what he came up with, but – I don't know. Pruitt.
Well, I don't know if like I'm not saying Jeremy Pruitt sits there for like 3 hours and is like, all right, if they ask this, here's what I'm going to say. But like surely like before they go into the press conference, there's like a 15-minute like, hey, here's what you can probably expect here.
Yeah.
I would avoid saying this.
Yeah. And I think, you know, Bill Martin, who's pretty new at Tennessee, SID there and that staff, they would be proactive in saying, hey, let's go through this stuff. I would think he would be usually very much resistant or just not caring about that stuff. I mean, that's what he is. Right? He's a ball. Whatever. You know, do the media stuff. The minimum you have to do. Get back to coaching your team. It's about winning. But yeah, I would say he probably now realizes that he's got to do whatever he can to calm the fires around the program.
I wonder if Jeremy Pruitt's restlessness towards the Vols' football woes is closing the gap on where the fans' restlessness
wow.
is.
Mm. Wow.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
Ryan Porth is like, he is an expert of the dad joke.
Well, I wonder if they're going to run and pass this week.
Well, to that point.
It sounds.
I mean, Jeremy Pruitt had some very interesting comments yesterday about how maybe to fix the offense as they move forward here. Here's what Jeremy Pruitt had to say.
Coach, how do you become more creative on offense? And do you feel that like the way you all are playing offense with kind of ball control and run it a lot, that the margin for error for the defense is even tighter?
Listen, offensively, the name of the game is scoring points.
Woo!
You can do it a bunch of different ways. You can run it every snap or you can throw it every snap, right? It's my belief that you probably need to be able to do both.
Oh, yeah.
And you've got to mix it in there, and you've got to keep the defense on their heels. You know, when you do that, sometimes you got to throw play action passes or drop back passes on first down. And when you do that, you got to take advantage of it. If they guard them, you got to take the check downs. You can't get holding calls. We've got to call an aggressive game. And when we do that, we've got to execute it, to soften the other team up.
I tell you what, Joe, that gets me fired up. Sometimes you got to run the ball. Sometimes you got to throw it. And it's his belief. Sometimes you got to do both.
You know, that's just a total whatever coach speak answer. And now it is damning information about Jeremy Pruitt. You know, it's amazing how this stuff goes.
It's a glorious 12 seconds of that press conference.
Offensively, the name of the game is scoring points. You can do it a bunch of different ways. You can run it every snap or you can throw it every snap, right? It's my belief that you probably need to be able to do both.
That was Jeremy Pruitt summoning his like inner Booger McFarland there of like, you know what? I think you might need to score more points than the other team to win.
And then you think a little shade of Jim Chaney.
Well, yeah, he goes on later in that clip talking about, hey, you know, play action passes on first down, pushing the ball down the field, throwing the ball on first down. I mean, I think that's a shot at Jim Chaney because Jim Chaney, you know what he doesn't do? Throw the ball on first down, play action pass on first down.
He does throw on third and one at Georgia.
Yeah.
To like, allow his quarterback to fumble and totally flip the game around.
Yeah.
That's the thing. I thought Jim Chaney wasn't conservative enough in that game.
Yeah, but I think he's been way too conservative since then, probably.
Well, predictable. And the thing is, that question of Pruitt was about creativity, right? I mean, But he didn't answer that part of it, right?
No. How do you be more creative? Oh, we got to score points.
Yeah.
We're either going to run the ball, throw the ball, or maybe we'll just do both.
Maybe a mixture of both could be tossed in. Like a chef making a nice recipe there, old Jeremy Pruitt, offensive football genius. That's where they are, third year.
Some people eat, some people drink water. I say do both.
It may be essential to living. Let's go back to the text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Ben texts in, I'm tired of hearing him. How come we can't just get rid of the guy? So what if he signed an extension? Even if they have to pay him. They have plenty of money, so just move on and get back to fixing the future. I could get a promotion tomorrow and still be fired on Friday.
What percentage of Tennessee fans, because you can't go by social media, or I mean, I love all of you on the text line, but you know, there's a lot of people who don't go on social media, who don't interact with shows or even maybe go on Facebook. What percentage of actual Tennessee fans want Jeremy Pruitt fired right now?
Oh, really? I bet, at least 50%. Right now?
Yeah,
absolutely.
Right now?
Yeah, I bet 50%.
All right. Well,
probably a little bit more.
Yeah, you think so? More than half the fan base wants him fired right now?
Yeah. Look, this is not just a Jeremy Pruitt thing. It's a buildup of events over the last 12 years that
right.
has led to a lot of impatience.
Well, I get it. I do. And he's not helping himself in any way. In talking, coaching, anything he's doing, it's not helping. But early in year three, with all that has come before you to create the impatience, do you not then have to think about longer timelines about someone actually fixing this stuff?
Well, yeah, but you also have to be given a reason to have some sort of hope that he can fix it.
Yep.
And there's been zero hope this point.
Well, so his whole tenure, there's been zero hope? He has demonstrated nothing in his entire tenure.
Well, that's why the Arkansas game was so big to me, because I think all momentum that he may have generated is now completely out the door.
Yeah.
Because you win six games in a row to close out last year, eight games total with the two that you started this year with. And now a guy in his first year at the worst program, well, not the worst, but one of the worst programs in the SEC has come in year one and has beaten you.
Oh, it's bad right now.
Everything that he has done has been totally undone by what happened Saturday in Arkansas.
Well, but it's not the number one thing, but very high in the list of things you must do is you must bring in talent and you must have a talented roster. And I think he has done a pretty good job there. Not good enough to compete with the big boys. And then I hear you on everything about momentum. I'm just saying that it's not zero positivity, right? I mean, before he turned it around last year, people wanted him fired early in the second season. It's just so early right now, and I think all the negatives get blown up, and anything he's done that's good gets lost right now.
Let's go to our 1025 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and bring in our friend David from Portland. David, thanks for calling in to Robbie and Rex Road.
Okay, Rex, your buddy up at the New Sentinel, Blake.
Blake Topmeyer?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
He ran the figures yesterday and sent me a text that the buyout for Pruitt is $13 million, full amount. If he gets another job, he still gets the $13 million. That's not including any assistant coaches. The man in charge up there is not going to fire him because he hired him. So do I approve of his coaching and everything? Nope. Do I think he's going to make it up there as a coach? Nope. Do I think they're going to fire him and pay that buyout? Not unless Mr. Haslam comes up and says, okay, it's time. Let's get rid of him. I got the money, honey.
It's a good point, David. And also, there's another few million for the assistants that are locked in. So you're probably talking about, what, 16? It's a lot of money.
Well, I understand Tennessee is a gigantic public institution. The football program, the athletic department, they make a lot of money. But they don't have, like, unlimited amounts of money. They're still paying Butch Jones right now. They don't have an unlimited amount of money to just throw out there for people that are not coaching their football team.
When's
especially
his last
after
check?
This year.
When's his last
I
check,
I
want to
say it's this year. I think this year may be his last one. I'll have to look.
It's close.
It's got to be close. But, I mean,
you get him off the books and you put somebody else right on the books.
Put it right on the books. And right now, I mean, Butch Jones has got to be the highest paid intern in the country right now, right?
I would think so. There are some, I mean, maybe there's an intern at Google or something. Yeah, I don't know.
Let's go back to our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Sam texts in, the line on the Tennessee game has gone down to A&M -8.5. If every Vol fan donated $5 and took A&M, could we raise enough money to pay a buyout for Jeremy Pruitt? That's a good question.
Well, I've heard that whole the fans raise like a GoFundMe to fire a coach. You've seen that before. You've also seen the, hey, why can't we get into the endowment thing? Which never happens, never will. But like David just said, Haslam family, if you want them out bad enough,
step in there.
You've got the money.
Let's go back to the text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Steven from Hendersonville texts in, says, this feels like the next to last year with Butch Jones, a letdown. Underperforming team, excuse-filled season. The only difference is the analogies are less comical, but equally as funny.
Yeah, there's a little, it's a little different. Butch was just like, Butch was seriously like a wind-up doll, and he would just spit them out, you know? Pruitt, you got to dig a little deeper, but he's.
Do you, though?
Well,
just said you got to run, you got to throw, and sometimes you got to do both.
Offensively, the name of the game is scoring points. You can do it a bunch of different ways. You can run it every snap or you can throw it every snap, right? It's my belief that you probably need to be able to do both.
It does seem to get funnier each time. Like when I first heard it, I was like, yeah, okay, it's just coach speak, but it's pretty funny. Especially when you cut it off right there.
Yeah.
You know, you cut it off. You got to just take it out of context.
That's what we're good at here on this show. Let's go back to the text line. Driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Got a texture that says, do Tennessee fans not remember that no one wants to come coach there and ride that carousel?
Wow.
It is still a pretty good job. But
that's a good point, though, because if Philip Fulmer is giving up on his guy this early,
yeah,
who's raising their hand to come work for Philip Fulmer?
Well, my question would be, if this continues to go really poorly, like, is Philip Fulmer going to be making the next decision as hiring a coach? Because I'm not convinced that he will.
Yeah, that's a possibility, too. I mean, he's always been sort of a bridge guy. Older guy came in, kind of rescued the day with John Curry getting fired. So it never was supposed to be a really long tenure, right? It was supposed to be Philip Fulmer saves football. He hires a coach who can actually coach it, and here we go. And thank you and retire, and we appreciate your service. But are they gonna fire him? Who's gonna do that?
I don't know.
Who's stepping up and saying, sorry, Phil, you're out of there, buddy?
Peyton Manning.
Okay. Good day. You imagine bringing Peyton in to fire Phil? I doubt he'd do that.
Why can't Peyton just be AD and coach?
Hey,
can't he be AD and coach and quarterbacks coach?
Those rumors will start. Those rumors will start for sure. When we come back, we're going to put our professor hats on. We've got some grades to hand out for the Tennessee Titans. That's next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Titans fans, Corner Pub is the place to check out the game with locations in Bellevue, Brentwood, or downtown and great beer specials, including $1 off of Yazoo and Happ & Harry's draft beers, plus Happ & Harry's bucket specials. Don't miss Nashville's best NFL pregame show live from the Corner Pub downtown this Thursday. Join ESPN 102.5 The Game from 5 to 7 p.m. prior to the Titans taking on AFC South rival Indianapolis Colts at Nissan Stadium. The NFL pregame show features Jared Stillman, Floyd Reese, and former Titans wide receiver Chris Sanders, and is brought to you by Wholesale Inc., powered by Rumble On, Farm Bureau Health Plans, and Kubota Tractors, Middle Tennessee Kubota dealers. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. I believe our producer, Ryan Porth, is going to have to be, like, just consoled in the production room next to us. He's crying in there, laughing at Jeremy Pruitt's offensive genius that he threw out there.
He is literally the gift that keeps on giving, and I hope that Philip Fulmer holds on to Jeremy Pruitt as long as possible so that we can keep getting golden quotes like that.
So let's just rate Jeremy Pruitt against Butch Jones as a gift that keeps on giving in this one.
Okay.
You're saying he's better than Butch?
No one's better than Butch.
Well, what do we mean? Like, in terms of, I would much rather listen to Jeremy Pruitt explain things than Butch.
True.
Okay, so even when things are going well, it's hilarious to listen to Jeremy Pruitt say some things. Okay,
yes.
But like the champions of life quote, right? I mean, you can't top that, right? Well, Jeremy Pruitt, you got a long way to go, Jeremy Pruitt.
What about the turnover trash can? Is Pruitt going to get his own turnover trash can on the sideline?
I mean,
you remember that when they used to get the interception and go dunk the ball
into
the trash
can? I was at that game in Atlanta that night, and all these people are, and I'm covering that game, and that was like, it was, they beat Georgia Tech, and I looked down, like, what are they doing? Why do they run it? And on the broadcast, as they were talking about, right, turnover trash, I'm like, what is happening on the ball sideline? Meanwhile, they're giving up like 400 yards rushing, but they won.
Pruitt is closing the gap on Butch Jones.
Okay, I like it. Very, very well done there. Okay. There is a gap, though. You admit there's a gap.
A little, but Pruitt is quickly closing that gap.
Let's go back to the text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Chris texts in, you know, we were talking about what percentage of Tennessee fans want him fired. 63.27% want him fired, according to Chris.
Okay.
So a very exact percentage given there by Chris. All right. We appreciate your dedication.
See, I'm sure more than half of the fan base is unhappy with him and very questioning about where this is going. But actually saying he must be fired now. Like, I'm giving you the choice, Vols fan. You get to make the move. You are firing him or you are letting him here midway through his third season, see if he can turn this around, figure it out.
See, that's an interesting place to be because I said yesterday, like, I fully don't believe he's the guy. Like, I've seen enough to think that he is not the guy that Tennessee football is going to get back to the level of prominence that they're searching for. But I also am realistic enough, I think, to know he's probably not going to get fired this year either. So it's a tough spot to be in because, you know, I don't really want to pay a coach to not coach anymore. But at some point, you got to move on when you know he's not the guy.
Well, that's the question, you know. I mean, let's face it. It's not your money if you're a fan being put
in this. Yeah, it's not mine.
You're a fan being put in this situation, and the perception is they just print money at places like Tennessee with Tennessee football. But if you could make the decision, you'd say, okay, we're going to move on right now, and Phil Fulmer is going to try to hire a coach when he didn't let the other guy get anywhere close to the full amount of time you normally give a coach.
Yeah.
And who wants to work at Tennessee right now? In that, under those conditions, when you look at the last couple coaching searches and how far down the list you had to go to hire those coaches.
You know, Hugh Freeze yesterday said it would take a special kind of a place to get him out of Liberty.
Wonder what he was talking about there.
Already doing some negotiating. Let's go back to the text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Got a texture that says, the Vols aren't even getting good players into the draft. What is the benefit of having Pruitt? What does he do well? Win a game here and there, so what? What are his good attributes?
It's his third year. How could he have players in the draft? I mean, again, I don't mean to be Mr. like defend Jeremy Pruitt here, but you're talking about the draft? It's his third year.
Yeah, like guys that would be in the draft right now are Butch Jones guys.
Right. I mean, this is the problem is like everything gets blamed. I mean, even with Butch, it was like everything bad that ever happened was Butch's fault by the end, you know? Which is funny because midway through 2016, I think Butch probably could have run for governor after that Hail Mary in Georgia. You know, they're going to win the East. They're going to go to Atlanta. Look at the recruiting he's done, brick by brick, and it went fast.
The next year.
Yes. Even like that year when he lost to Vanderbilt, it was like, oh, okay, never mind, you're out.
Yeah. So, I mean, look, we know that it changes very quickly here with Tennessee, but, I mean, I just don't think he's the guy. Let's go back to the text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Drew in Mount Juliet text in, what about using Pruitt as a different coach instead of the head coach? Could make the old, hey, we'll fire you. Not be the head coach, but you can come be the DC. What do you make
of
that?
There you go. Jeremy, let's have a talk. So who would step in? Is it Fulmer then stepping in as head coach?
I guess.
That was the big thing last year, right?
We've had two texts on the text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Just like, screw it. Bring back Fulmer.
I mean, last year that was beyond the point of rumor last year. There was some reporting, which I was a little bit confused by that whole thing. The idea that this was going to be Fulmer stepping in and, you know, thanks, Jeremy. It's just a disaster, and I'm going to step in and be the head coach. I have a hard time with that one.
Yeah. Got some breaking news in the SEC. We talked about A&M and their outbreak with COVID-19. reports are that over a dozen players this week for the Aggies will not be available for the trip upcoming to Tennessee. So that's a lot. I mean, over a dozen can mean a lot of different things, or more than 12. I don't know what the specific number is, but
six of one, half dozen of the other.
But I would say the game at this point at least has to be somewhat in question if you've got over a dozen guys not able to make the trip and play at Tennessee this weekend.
Where are you seeing that?
This is coming from SEC Mike on Twitter, Michael Bratton. He's verified.
I don't think I follow Michael Bratton. Okay. More. That's an interesting way to say it. Down over a dozen. That's a quote from somebody. So Saturday down south. Okay. Over a dozen this week. That's interesting. Yeah. And that's obviously, I don't know where they are in their holes. You know, how many scholarship guys they have. Like at Vanderbilt, that would be basically, you're about done.
You're in trouble. Yeah.
I don't know what that means for Texas A&M. And, of course, who is it? Is it one particular position group that's hard hit? You know, so many questions about that. But, yeah, that makes it – that moves us closer to this game could be in jeopardy.
Yeah, and, I mean, if you're Tennessee, obviously you don't want any game to be canceled because you might think about that if you're a Vols fan and be like, good, we don't have to play Texas A&M this week, but you need all the revenue you can get in there. And a home game, even if it is a limited capacity home game, that's a big deal for Tennessee right now. You need all the money you can get.
Right.
So they're gonna make it up at some point. They're not just gonna not play the game.
Well, they'll make it up on the 12th if they can make it up on the 12th, right?
Right.
Problem is, at some point we're gonna get a team that has two games that are pushed to the 12th, you know, and really how important will this game be once you get to the end too? That's another question. I mean, I guess if you're Tennessee, you could look at it like also, depending on who the players are, you may now have a better chance of winning the game.
It could be for Texas A&M, though. I mean, they're ranked fifth now.
Could be.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, again, it's sort of like they have to have style points wherever they play. They have to have style points and look great every time they play and hope they get help.
Right. Like, I'm not sure the game for them against Tennessee specifically is going to make all that much of a difference. And, you know, unless they lose, obviously. But
right. So it's a chance to not lose.
Right.
You give up. You know.
Yeah, even if it's not for the playoff, it could be the difference between, you know, some bowl game and a New Year's Six game for them if they were to continue to win.
Yeah, but I mean, wouldn't they be in position at, right? But wouldn't they be in the same position 8-1 as they would be at 9-1? Probably, right? One lost team,
sure. But to Robbie's point, I mean, what if they were to lose that game? Then that so allows another team to
right. So that's a reason for them to not want to play it. Because they're afraid of the Vols.
Yes, that's what we've discovered here. A&M,
they run and pass, did you know?
Sometimes they do both at the same time. When we come back, we'll get to what we were supposed to get to in this segment. We'll hand out grades for the Titans. That's coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth taking you through this Tuesday morning here in Nashville, Tennessee. We'll be joined by Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports to begin the 9 o'clock hour. Get to all things NFL with Charles, so looking forward to that. But, Joe, you have written a story at The Athletic basically breaking down the Titans by different categories via position and having a whole bunch of different grades that you've handed out and different categories of judging the Titans so far through 8 games this season. So without further ado, I'll let you continue to set this up, and we'll react to some of the grades out there.
Yet another shameless plug from Joe Rexroad.
There you go. So it's mid-season grades time. So at The Athletic, they wanted everybody to grade, but you give some freedom on how to do it because some people grade each player.
That's a lot.
And I'm like, I'm not grading Nate Davis's blocking this year. I mean, you know, I'm not going back through the tape and grading Nate Davis or, you know, like Chris Milton on punt coverage, you know. So I went by unit. I think that's a fair and easier way to do it. You can grade the performance of a group of players.
How would you grade the Titans' ability to run the ball, throw the ball, and maybe at times do both?
I give them an A.
Okay,
they do both.
Good. Okay.
In every game so far, they've actually done both things.
Okay, I just wanted to establish that before we get started.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Good question. But I got ahead of the class and a detention bound for every.
Ooh, detention.
Yeah. So we kind of made the school theme. You know what I mean?
I like it.
And then potential for improvement. Because really, it's about where can they get better within these groups as you move forward. You know, some places you look at it and they're playing awfully well, mostly on the offensive side. I think one place on the defensive side, it's like, boy, how are they going to get better? Another place, I feel like they actually might get a lot better, or they might be in the process of doing so. So, I don't know. You want to if you want to throw out any grades, you're welcome to, or you can guess my grades, or who would be the head of the class or detention bound for any particular
group? Well, let's take two or three position groups and really dive in a little bit. I don't want to give away your entire article here on the show, but if the people are interested in reading that, they can go to The Athletic. But let's start with the cornerback position defensively. And we can go through, I guess, each individual player if you wanted to, but more just the potential for improvement, because I haven't read this yet, but when you talk about maybe potential for improvement at a position on defense, that was the position that first came to mind for me, with maybe getting Adoree back, Desmond King stepping in, having more of a full-time role with the Titans. Am I off base there?
Yeah, no, massive potential for improvement. I gave him a D, by the way. Cornerbacks, a D, which actually may be kind. But again, it's also like when you're grading. So, like, if you're going to grade Jonathan Joseph, okay, I mean, you give him an F, right? But not
sure.
An F for wanting to be good. He just
couldn't play anymore.
Yeah, so it's like, are you grading the play relative to what you are, or the construction of the cornerback group? Because also injuries have been a part of it, of course. Christian Fulton has been out, Chris Jackson in and out, and Adoree Jackson has not been out there at all. So, you know, I think that the potential is very good. If Desmond King is going to come in and be really good in the slot, then, yeah, you got to like that potential.
And in terms of, like you said, D was the grade you gave the cornerbacks, I would assume that the reason it's not an F, I mean, Malcolm Butler, I think, has been pretty good for the most part. I mean, especially when you have Jonathan Joseph on the other side. A lot of teams were just totally avoiding Malcolm Butler to begin with, because why would you throw over there when you could just throw to Jonathan Joseph's side? I mean, Butler did struggle against Minnesota. I mean, he got eaten alive by Justin Jefferson. But largely this year, even though you can point to a play here and there, I think Butler has been decent at corner for this team.
Easily head of the class, Malcolm Butler.
yes, I would say so.
He is easily head of the class. Yeah, no, he's been pretty good. That's the thing. It's been a while. Minnesota is the last time that really I remember Malcolm Butler having a real bad game, right? I mean, I think in a lot of cases, it's just like, why would we throw over there when that guy's out there?
Yeah.
You know, but when he's been tested, I think he's been good.
Maybe the most interesting grade, I'm interested to see what you've given, is special teams, because I think that's an interesting group to figure out this year. You've had some injuries. You've had some rotating players in and out that you've had to deal with. And let's be frank, at times, some very disappointing players that have come in there as well. What did you make of the special teams group as a whole?
What's your grade for special teams?
Ooh, I would probably say at this point a D+.
Okay. I went C minus.
Okay. So
I'm a little bit of an easy grader. Yeah, it's weird because your punting has been elite, and gosh, you even bring in Ryan Allen and he's blasting.
Well,
I mean, they were line drives, but you averaged 50.5 on 8 punts. He punted a lot. The coverage in return has been fine, but it's not, you know, then they had the one big mistake against Pittsburgh. But then you have a long snapper issue, and then Gostkowski obviously is, I mean, he was my detention-bound member of the special
teams. He would be mine, too. Yeah.
But again, you're talking about a guy who won 3 games with game-winning kicks. And also, in one of those games, the game-winning kick was his 6th field goal.
Agreed. Now, in one of those game-winning games, he had missed like 3 or 4.
Right.
So it kind of balances out there. But, yeah.
But it's still 3 game winners. So he's 11 for 18 now with 2 missed extra points.
It's not inspiring.
It's not inspiring. So the potential for improvement with that group is basically, like, if Kern can get healthy and if Gostkowski can be steady. They signed a new kicker to the practice squad, by the way. I don't know what that means, but they have a new practice squad kicker.
Yeah.
So special teams has been, but you know, footballoutsiders.com, they do these special teams ratings that I think are beyond, that they are the most, I think, respected special teams ratings. And actually, I think new ones are coming out today. But going into last week's game, they had the Titans 31st out of 32nd in value added to your team. So C-minus actually may be a little bit kind.
What did you make of – oh, were you going to say something?
Go ahead.
What did you make of the outside linebacker group? Because that has been obviously the talking point with this team all year long. I know they played better on Sunday. I'm still giving it an F if it's me.
Yeah, see, you're a better and tougher grader than me. I said a late save on the midterm exam gives them a D.
Okay.
And I'm giving Harold Landry a decent grade. He's the head of the class. He's been out there doing his best. He has not produced as much as you wanted to produce. But
he's probably head of the class by default, but yeah.
Yes. But every week, that guy is busting it and playing every snap.
Yeah.
Now, see, Vic Beasley can't be detention bound because he was expelled, taking a year's worth of lunch money and a truck full of school supplies with him.
We have expulsion as part of this as well. I forgot about that.
So Clowney gets the detention bound. Yeah. And again, it's like $13 million. Right now, he's playing like a what, fill in the blank on the money player. I said maybe a $3 million player?
Maybe.
Maybe.
Two and a half, three.
So he's the guy.
Porsche looking at us like one.
Yeah, too high.
Well, Vic Beasley was $100,000 tops.
That's actually pretty kind
of
you.
Which is lower than
that like
minimum
package of milk they used to give you in school that you stabbed the straw into and sucked it out of there. That's what Vic Beasley was. Wow. That's about how much value
one,
he
just
brought
one
to the table.
One
thing of milk.
All Vic Beasley has been worth all season long is one of those little pamphlets that you get at Nissan Stadium when you go to the game, and it's the Logan's Roadhouse race or whatever they do.
Yeah, yeah.
And if you win, if that character wins the race, you can go to Kroger and get a free milk or whatever.
Oh, it's milk that, again, huh?
That's a lot of milk discussion. In this,
that little pamphlet is all Vic Beasley has been worth.
Okay.
All season long.
Why he's expelled.
He's
been expelled.
Can I go out on a limb and say that the running back at the head of the class is Derrick Henry and the quarterback at the head of the class is Ryan Tannehill? What's your grade been for Logan Woodside thus far?
Yeah,
do you have one?
At quarterback for the head of the class spot, I said, okay, so these grades don't work as well for some units. Yeah, well, I had to put Logan Woodside in detention bound. You got to put somebody there. I said he's been a nice story, and Titans fans don't want to see him.
What about Trevor Siemian for not beating out Logan Woodside?
Oh.
What do you think about that?
Yeah.
You should have done these.
You should have done these instead of me. Gosh, that's a good point. But the potential for improvement with that group is – we don't talk about this enough. Ryan Tannehill is going to get himself hurt.
God, I hope not.
he never slides.
I know.
He did it again the other day.
I
mean, if I'm those coaches, I'm screaming at him. Like, I don't care you got two more yards. What are you doing?
Get down. Stop jumping up in the air and doing your celebrations going into the end zone, which, by the way, we saw Josh Allen of the Bills totally rip off on Sunday, and he landed it much better than Tannehill
did. He did, but that was lame.
But it was lame. You can't steal people's end zone celebrations. But, yeah, Tannehill, I respect the want to that he's got about him, and he's a big guy. But you talk about a player that they can't afford to lose, he is at the top of that list.
Yeah. I mean, he's got to stop that stuff. I mean, he's been hurt before. It's not like he's, an uninjurable dude. So basically, the offensive grades are like A's. It's like running back, A. What else do you give a running back? That's an A.
Yeah.
Quarterback, A. Receivers, I went A-, but I mean, those guys have been really good. And then the defensive grades are all bad.
I gave running backs a B+.
Really?
Yeah.
Think there's another level Derrick Henry can reach?
Absolutely another level.
But is that an A plus? Is that an A plus level we're judging him on? And maybe A is what we're seeing right now.
Probably.
Do we have unfair expectations for him?
Outside of one game, which was the Houston game, we have not seen peak Derrick Henry yet, which we typically don't see peak Derrick Henry until the second half of the year.
I mean, the dude has 843 yards against packed boxes every week and now with a banged-up offensive line, you know?
Sure, but you also have to admit that what he did – now, it was historic what he did last you know, week 17.
Yeah, that's beyond A+. Yeah.
But, like, what we've seen, there have been some games where the yards have exceeded what the actual product was out there and the effectiveness.
I'm going to have to go ahead and sort of disagree with you there.
Okay. Like the Denver game.
Yeah. I don't think, I agree, early in the season, I don't think he looked quite as forceful. Maybe a couple games.
Yeah.
I mean, I even think last week, though, he was running his butt off. And he, I mean, so there was a great stat Glennon had. He had 75 yards after contact against the Bears.
Yeah.
He had 68 yards. Okay. So I don't know, man. Just his own performance right now, I think it's pretty good. You're right. He's not putting up the ridiculous numbers. And that offensive line is not dominating like they did. They dominated people. It's so hard, you know, when you're separating these things out. I mean, if he gets no blocking, he's a terrible running back, right?
Right.
I mean, so I think he's been awfully good. And then you wonder, does he have some big number games coming up in the second half of the season, like when they play the Lions? If you saw Dalvin Cook and what he did. Dalvin
yes.
Cook's ahead of Derrick Henry in the rushing race because of that. By
played
the way.
One fewer game, by the way, too.
Yeah, but he won't get that game. He missed the game.
Exactly.
But yes. 858 to 843. But, like, that is a game where that could be a 250 game, right?
Be. When we come back, our good friend Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports will join us. We'll get into all things NFL with him. That's next. This is Robbie and Rexrode, live from the Wholesale Link Studio, powered by RumbleOn.com, here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.